Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good night to all of my blessed beloveds out there all over the world, scattered, and some are actually my neighbors, so hello. And here in this glorious seacoast area, we are suffering from a severe case of beautiful weather, gorgeous fall weather, a little crispy in the morning, a little frosty, some frozen spots, but the sun is out and the sky is clear and it's just an amazing, amazing day. So as most of you know, today I will be honored and blessed to interview Reverend Phil and Reverend Marianne of Unity of the Seacoast and get to know them a little bit better and talk about what they do, why they do it, and what inspires them, because that's why we listen to the show. We love inspiration. A little overview of my week. It has been an incredibly busy week, but it's been very productive, very inspiring, very motivating. And I went out yesterday to be a little fairy and send a couple of special people some packages. And lo and behold, when I checked my P.O. box, I had a package from Ireland. Giddy me. I was just ear-to-ear smile ever since. Last night, we had a little bit of an earthquake. It was a 4.6, and it's not common around here, but, you know, the earth has to stretch and has its growing pains, and I'm on the phone with my best friend, and I had a few words that I won't share with you at first as the quake was quaking, and I'm just holding on to the wall, which, and, you know, afterthought, what is the purpose of holding on to a wall when you're having an earthquake? But being the goober that I am, I was more concerned that my fish tanks were going to fall over and my poor little fishies were going to be smushed. But there was no damage, and it was a kind of a nice wake-up call, because when I tried to reach several people to check in to see how they were doing across the east, the communication lines were seized up because everybody was trying to call, and it actually brought back memories of being in the McCormick Center in Chicago on September 11th. Took quite some time for communications to work, because obviously that was huge. And then when we had the power outage in Ohio a few years ago, we had just landed, and I was working with Cabot Creamery, and the north from Ohio all the way up to Maine, the power grid went out and again seized up communications. So what it inspired me to do was to figure out different ways to make sure that there are communications when there are no communications, and just food for thought, just a random thought for the day. So Amy is actually out teaching today, so you've got only me, which could be good, could be bad, but go easy on me in the chat room. And on Facebook, I'll be checking periodically, as always. And if you have any questions, feel free to call in. The number here is 347-205-9443. And if you are sneaking us at work, like most of you do, or you're curling into your pajamas, crawling into bed, and you really don't want to call in, that's fine. Sign up for a free Blog Talk Radio account so you can chat away with me. I'm here, and I'm looking forward to today. So, without further ado, Reverend Phil.
Hello. Hey, how you doing, Rusty?
Very well. Good afternoon. How are you?
Excellent.
All right. Reverend Marianne?
Hi, Rusty. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you today?
Great.
All right. So I sent you the five questions that I ask everybody. Who wants to go first?
Let's see. The first question is, who are you? Like the old Who song. Honey, you want
that one
first?
Who are you?
All right, I'll take it. All right, I'm Reverend Marianne McPherson Boynton, hyphenated. I'm an interfaith minister, co-leader of Unity of the Seacoast in Rollinsford, New Hampshire. I also run a Christian preschool, and I'm the religious leader in Massachusetts. So I go from state to state.
Very cool. So what does an interfaith minister mean, Reverend Marianne?
As an interfaith minister, I respect all paths to God. I've studied all different religions, and there's a similarity in all of them. They're much more similar than people think they are. And there's yes.
I agree with that totally. So, Reverend Phil, who are you?
I'm also, well, I'm Mary Ann's husband, which is a very wonderful thing indeed. And, you know, I'm part of a team of a man and a woman who are both interfaith ministers. We were both ordained a few years ago. Mary Ann has been sort of leading the way a year or two ahead of me at all times, getting her ordination from the Chaplaincy Institute of Maine, which is, we'll mention that if we can, a great one of six or seven interfaith divinity schools around the country. She explained a little bit about interfaith. So I'm an interfaith minister, but Mary Ann and I are essentially, you know, practicing at a Unity Church, the only Unity Church in the state of New Hampshire, over in Rollinsford next to Dover. And we also have Wednesday evening interfaith services, so that church is very much, it's a Unity Church, but of course when your spiritual leaders are ordained interfaith, you're also going to get a sort of a broader brush, if you will. I also wanted to mention, it's a good thing to mention, that I'm also, both of us really share a music ministry, if you will, and you've got some of my music. I think we might be playing one of those songs later on.
Absolutely.
And it's I really came into this through more through the musical end of things as I met my wife a few years ago and then got more of a calling just maybe 3 or 4 years ago to go into a full-blown ministry. So my background is more as a originally as a spiritual musician several years ago, and now we're pretty much on equal footing and blending together like a good spiritual stew.
A spiritual stew, boy.
That just came to me. It was kind of weird, but
yeah, that was divine. Spiritual stew. We'll have to dig into that one later.
Sure.
So, what I can either one of you be a little bit more specific on interfaith and what that means? I get that question all the time, and
sure,
it would be nice to have you explain. Yeah,
I'll grab that. Mary Ann mentioned that, you know, we've both been to an interfaith divinity school, so that's just, well, what's that? And studied the world's religions and seen that there's an enormous amount of common ground, you know, universal spiritual principles, compassion, love, all that wonderful stuff across there. But to me, it's sort of twofold. There's, and this is from experience, and that's what spirituality is to me, is experience. Coupled with faith. So here's what I mean by that. Interfaith can be sort of two-pronged. One is sort of, you'll have to excuse me, they're mowing our lawn.
Good timing. They should be picking up my recycling soon, so you'll hear
great.
That.
Yeah, such is the human world. So there's two things that I've either experienced or I've had associates, ministers, and kind of describe it this way. There's the interfaith path where one is sort of vertical, and one is horizontal. The horizontal one, I think, is probably more my take, and that's where you begin to awaken and start to see that there's a little bit of something in a whole bunch of different spiritual paths, and you start to say, a little of this, a little of this teacher, and cobble that together into your own personalized faith, if you will, mm-hmm. or for lack of a better word, maybe that is the best word. The other one I've witnessed and not experienced, one of my teachers, in fact, Mary Ann and I both had a wonderful teacher who was Jewish, but an interfaith minister as well, fantastic guy named Joel Grossman. I hope Joel's listening to this because we love you, Joel. Joel, very, very, very deeply into his own faith, but he studied, you know, Hinduism, Buddhism, all different types of faith paths, Islam, and just was so inspired by all that, inspired him to go very, very deep into his own faith tradition because he could see it being supported by other ones. So that's sort of the vertical mm-hmm. deep dive. Does that help a little bit?
It does. It does. It's just a lot of people ask what interfaith means, and I know what it means. You know what it means, but it's a better answer when you can answer from your own experience. So, great.
Okay.
So talk to me a little bit about Unity. What makes Unity, and where did it even come from? When I was told about it, I'm like, that's not possible.
You want this one, honey?
Yes. Unity actually was not a religion to begin with. It came.
It's still not a religion.
It really isn't. Yeah. I was very taken by Unity because it. I had. I will get into this about having had the need for prayer and healing, just as Myrtle Fillmore did. Way back when.
One of the founders of Unity.
The founders, Myrtle and Charles, were the founders, and she had come from a family that were very sickly, and she just expected to be sickly. And then she realized that she didn't have to be sick, that she could just realize that she wasn't and just go to Jesus or go to prayer or just herself and go within and say, no, I'm not going to be sick. I'm going to be fine. And then suddenly she was fine. And this all started the movement of Unity. It all that you actually, there's a power in this, one power, and it's God is good. God is good always. So God is not going to be giving you illness. So she was aware of this and that we don't have to be carried, we don't have to go because our parents were sick. It doesn't mean we have to be sick. That we have our own, we can use our own thoughts and be who we want to be, using our own words, our own actions. And we can just deny sickness and affirm, I am well, I am healthy. And going to my own personal story, I had breast cancer twice. I mean, I was the director of my school at the first time. It was a Christian school in a congregational church. I had many, many people praying for me. I did not have a religious background myself as a child, but I knew these prayers were coming. I was almost going, no, don't give me the prayer, child, don't, you know, but everybody did. And I had parents and teachers and people from the church praying, and it worked, and I knew prayer worked. From there, I joined the Unity Church because Unity is, to me, I call it the prayer capital of the world. This silent unity is that where they you can call in and they will pray for you 24/7. When I got to Unity, this Unity in Amesbury, Mass, my first experience with a Unity Church, I became a chaplain. I have no idea why I wanted to become a chaplain. It was just one of those things. Do I want to be a chaplain? And I did. And then I was thinking about wanting to become a minister. I actually wanted to become a Unity minister, but I would have had, as a single parent, I could not move away to Unity Village. And at that time, it was several years there studying, so I couldn't do that. And, of course, you know, synchronicities, the chime people actually walked into the church, and they were given lectures there and trying to get students and, you know, one thing led to another, and I became an interfaith minister.
That's great. Great story. Thank you for sharing that.
But there's more to it. I mean, if I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
jump in.
The second half of that, Marianne, I think, shared that very, very easily, and it's the truth. It started with this couple, Myrtle and Charles Fillmore. So Myrtle was the sort of the pioneer, and we see parallels in our lives, of course, with Marianne being more the pioneer in this ministry. She very much was told in, I think she was in Science of the Mind or something like that lecture, and was told, you can heal yourself. And she turned to prayer very, very sickly, and her husband watched this. Now, this guy, Charles Fillmore, to me, was very much of an intellectual and wanted to see proof. So he watched her, saw what she was doing, sending love and just self-love to her organs, to her blood, to every part of her body, and saw the enormous healing. He had already been a student of the Bible and could see very much in many of the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament that he could see it actually happening before his eyes, that we are, you know, we are love, and that we can heal ourselves, and we have this, what we call in Unity, this divine potential within, to heal ourselves and manifest and all that kind of stuff. So there's sort of that too, the healing, and then I think really the looking at Christ as an amazing teacher, and the great, one of the greatest inspirational avatars ever.
So I understand what motivated you, Reverend Marianne, to become an interfaith minister. That was great, and what a personal journey to have cancer twice. I have as well. Wasn't breast cancer, it was cervical. And so, you know, high five to both of us. Woohoo, we got through it. So, Reverend Phil, tell me a little bit about what inspired you. Why did you say, wow? Because we're going to get to your music for sure, and I know that that's a culmination. There's always this great, beautiful web thing that happens when you learn about other people. But so what was your inspiration? What was your motivation?
Sort of my inspiration and my path. I was several years ago, I was going through, and I'm sure there's people on the call and listening right now that have been divorced and their life has changed, you know, and a marriage and a relationship has ended. And there's been, you know, that sort of pain that we go through in that separation. So I went through, going through a rough situation. And at one point, I think I had, you know, the old proverbial, I kind of hit rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed a new pair of eyeglasses, so I went to a Vision whatever, and they said, you know, come back in an hour. So I had to kill an hour. I was walking through a mall. It was in Concord, New Hampshire, and I went into a bookstore I'd never been in before, and I went in, and right in the middle of the bookstore, there was a big rack called New Age, and I went, what is New Age? I never heard of it before. You know, it always, or if I, you know, people in my family kind of laughed at it or whatever and said, oh, those crazy woo-woos, you know. And I just felt very drawn to it. And this is where it started. I went to the middle. I said, there's this book all lit up under a light, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle.
Mm-hmm.
I picked it up, and I couldn't put it down. Just reading about being present. I had no one had ever told me before that it's more important to focus on what's going on right now as opposed to what you've just been through or what you could possibly go through and to be afraid of, to just live your life in the present moment. I went home, read the whole thing that night, and I think that's really where it started for me. And then I think not too many years later, I found myself continuing and find myself moving to the seacoast very close to Marianne, and we met. And she brought me to Unity. I wouldn't say it was against my will, but she said, oh, they've got great music there. And they do. They really, the music program then and now, I'm sure, in Amesbury was fabulous with a, you know, wonderful B3 player and a choir and a drummer. And I was very drawn in by the music and very inspired by that. But then I think just one of the things I was able to do is bringing teachers that I was interested in, like Eckhart Tolle, Don Miguel Ruiz, Marianne Williamson, Wayne Dyer, sort of more of these modern mystics, if you will, and seeing that they were being, what they were talking about was also being discussed in Unity every Sunday in some way, shape, or form. And I even asked the minister there at one point, I said, hey, you know what? It's all the same. And she said, yeah, pretty much. So one thing led to another, and Marianne got... she was ordained in, honey, was that 2007, and our big plan was that Marianne wanted to homestead or at some point somehow be a leader of a small unity church somewhere, and I was going to be her music director. So it was supposed to all stop there, and then about a year later, I think it was in 2008, and we can talk about this later if you want, Rusty, we became exposed to the Oneness Blessing. Hands-on blessing that we've been doing in our church for quite a while. And I got a Oneness Blessing, and darned if the next, I think it was 3 or 4 days later, I'm driving to my corporate job, and a beautiful day like today, and it wasn't a thought or anything more than just a feeling deep inside, Phil, it's time. You need to also become an interfaith minister and work with her. And so then I called up Chime that night, and enrolled, and that's sort of where it came for me. So that was great decision, and it's been a tumultuous experience ever since, but I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Very cool. So what I'd like to do is invite callers to call in if you have questions for Reverend Phil or Reverend Marianne. The number here is 347-205-9443. And I see some people hanging out in the chat room, but I don't have any questions, so feel free. Shoot a couple of questions, because Reverend Phil and Reverend Marianne are here and available, and this is great, great stuff. I'd like to kind of dig in a little bit about, you know, unity, the principles of unity. I attend unity when I can. This last Sunday I actually had the flu, so I couldn't attend. But it's a great, unique experience. I'm Christian-based. My foundation is Southern Baptist, and I practice and study Buddhism, and I'm currently reading the Living Talmud, which is another book of the Torah. And so it's, for me personally, it's a great experience to be surrounded with a variety of religious foundations, yet we all have the same desire, which is to be loved, to love, to be compassionate, and to see others' divinity versus a difference. It's one of the reasons this show is so successful, is I don't see borders, I don't see difference, I don't even like that word. So talk to us a little bit about unity in the sense of the commonalities.
The principles.
Yeah, let's start with the principles, Marianne.
The five basic unity principles. The first one is there is only one presence, there's only one power in the universe, and it's God the good. It's not someone, a God to be scared of. He's always good. God is good all the time. And the second principle is we are of God. So we are good. So you have a good God, you have a good person. The God is essence, it's called Christ. And Jesus fully expressed the Christ within him. And that is why, and that is someone that we are trying to be like. So Jesus is someone that we look to because he did it. He became conscious. He became awakened. He had that Christ essence within him. The third principle is we are co-creators with God. So it's not God doing it all by himself. We're right there doing it with him. We're creating reality, and we're creating them through our mind for all the thoughts that we hold. I have a little bumper sticker.
Bumper sticker, yeah.
That, and I believe this. So your thoughts are things. So you be careful what you think. You know, it's
right.
Very important. And the fourth principle is we need prayer and meditation. It's through prayer and meditation that we line up with God. And it's very important. You need prayer or meditation in order to get there, in order to reach God, in order to know God directly. And that's what we really want to do. And we can use, like, denials. We can deny that we're sick, and we can affirm that we are well. And it's through our actions. So it's through doing something. You don't just sit there. It's through our thoughts, through what we say, what we pray, what we do, that we can actually live all these truths. So you have to actually do something, which is what spirituality is all about, just doing and healing that way, knowing God directly.
All right, so what is, and here's the stumper question, what is the difference between faith and spirituality?
We're pointing at each other.
I know. I can sense it. You guys are looking at each other. Who wants this one?
It's a very intriguing question, and the stumper question, because it's not worded the way I'm used to it in the past. Do you want to talk about faith first, and then I'll talk about...
faith is one of the...
From the unity standpoint, why don't you start?
From the unity standpoint, faith is very important. I mean, it's letting go, and this is what I did, letting go. Because the second time I had breast cancer, I was determined to not lose the breast. I was determined to work at it, and I had several operations. And I was just so pig-headed. I was going to win. It was me. And then I finally let go, and I had faith. I let go, and I just went into peace, and I said, okay. And it was fine. But I wasn't going to be fine if I didn't. If I didn't have the faith and the trust that everything was going to be okay, I had to relax. I had to surrender. And one of my words is release, just release, release, release.
Yeah.
Because I had to. And, you know, I've always been able to say release. People look at me and go, oh, yeah, Marianne says release. But yet, when it came to myself, it was hard. It was hard to do that. And I had to have the faith that everything is in divine right order and it was going to work out okay. And it did. So that's my feeling for faith. Faith is important to have faith. Spirituality is just learning to know God directly. It's more individual rather than it's...
You want to jump in here? People have asked before, you know, what's the difference between, you've probably, a lot of your listeners probably have heard this one too, is what's the difference between spirituality and religion? Spirituality is very much experience. And religion can, no cut to religion, because I'm a very religious person as well, is really more based in belief. And to me, spirituality really is around experiencing the divine. And that, as an example for me, that's what got me sort of flicked the switch when I received a hands-on blessing from somebody, and I could feel this divine presence and love flowing through my brain and my body, and I felt really good and felt a closeness to God that I never felt before. Faith, as Marianne mentioned, is, I think, more rooted in belief. So I think there's not a difference there. I think they go hand in hand. I think faith is something that is grown and developed as we go through life because of our spirituality. Faith being this a belief that everything's going to work out in divine and right order. I am going to heal. I remember my mom always telling me, hey, don't worry, everything's going to work out in the end. But when I was a little kid, I didn't have any evidence of that.
Mm.
And then I experienced things working out in divine and right order as I got older. And that's a spiritual experience. So that they feed off of each other, especially faith feeding off of these spiritual experiences. And it can be something just as simple as somebody walking by you on the street and just giving you a look at just the right time that you needed that in your heart to strengthen your faith that everything's going to be okay, and whether it's healing or whatever, or essentially what we're here for is happiness and joy. So that to me, I think they're very, very interwoven.
All right. So let's take a few minutes and talk about your music. I was only able to download 2 out of 3, and let's start with, I'm going to start with One and the Same. Do you want to talk about it first, or do you want me to play it first, and then we can talk about it?
Sure, I'll give a little overview on the this is an album that I did a couple of years ago, actually, when I was in my first years in Chime and getting into Unity and studying more and more and having a lot of epiphanies, if you will. So the album's got a lot of Unity and a lot of teachings from different people, including my wife in there. One and the Same, they'll hear the lyrics, in everything God is, in everything the divine is. The album itself has a whole bunch of different songs. One of them is called The Voice of Knowledge, which is based on a book by Don Miguel Ruiz. I think the other cut I sent you that you were able to get at was Native American Flute, which is part of our sound healing we could talk about afterwards. But you can go ahead and play that. The album is available online, and you know, it's something people might want to get at some point. We do feature some of my music as well as several other, as you've already experienced, Rusty, I think, in your few months visiting us. We've got some great original musicians at this Unity Church. So music is a huge part of our ministry, and I think of the overall Unity movement in particular. Mm-hmm. But this church is just exploding with great musicians, and so that makes the message, when you weave the music and the message on a Sunday or a Wednesday or whatever together, it just sinks it at just a much deeper level. So this is called
Absolutely.
One and the Same. Yeah, One and the Same is the title cut.
All right, here we go.
Thank you. Vibration.
one and the same. One and the same. In everything God is. One and the same.
One and the Same by Reverend Phil.
Yeah.
The number here is 347-205-9443, and you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty. Amy's out teaching today, as she should be, celebrating her hard work and years of research and growing her business. And so I think she was going to try to sneak us in if she had a chance. And just big shout-out to Amy. Good job. High five. So today we're talking to Reverend Phil and Reverend Mary Ann of the Unity of Seacoast, and it's really an interesting story and a great ride, and if you have any questions, feel free, let us know. So Reverend Mary Ann, what inspires you and it's actually both of you, a question for both of you, but I wanted to start with you, Reverend Mary Ann. What inspires the sermons every Sunday? That's a question that came in off the chat room. So,
what inspires the sermons?
Sermons, the talks.
Your talks every week.
Okay. I'm always thinking of. I go within when I'm writing them, but I'm always thinking also of trying to help awaken and help people to grow in consciousness, as well as whatever service we write, we also are living through it. It always happens
yeah.
that way. That's the perfect sermon of that week. And I also am growing also in going through it. And get to know God directly and to have people have an experience. I think it's very important.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we have people come to us, which is a great
affirmation
for us, yes. Have them come to us and say that, oh, this inspired me or that inspired me, which is just wonderful. I was actually just looking on my Facebook page, and someone I hadn't seen for a long, long time just wrote that, you know, the things that you send me, and so I send her sermons and things, were just so inspiring, and I had no idea. You know, it was like, oh, it makes me feel really wonderful. Yeah.
That's great. So So when you, obviously you're husband and wife, so this is much easier to be a tag team each Sunday. But for the song One and the Same, you, when you played it, Phil, Reverend Phil, for us, the sermon was all about this concept. Talk to me a little bit of how you collaborate together, because it's just so much fun.
Well, thanks very much. Well, yeah, I wrote that song myself a few years ago, and if you're asking about the collaboration, I'll just kind of dovetail on to, you know, how we put services together. Marianne gave you sort of the high level. I'll give you a couple, little bit of a deep dive here and there. We do, people go, oh, you guys are crazy. We come home from service on Sunday. I collapse on the couch for about 20 minutes, and she says, stay there, honey. And she'll be putting around the dog or something like that. Our dog's name is Spirit, by the way, of course, the little, of course. And invariably, by the end of Sunday afternoon, one of us has had some kind of a, I could call it what it is, a channeling. It's usually one word. It's a word like, well, like last week you were doing compassion. A word will just hit us. Because one of us or both of us simultaneously have, or we're walking in the woods or we're walking on the beach later on Sunday afternoon or maybe even as late as Monday evening, we're going for a walk and we say, what does someone need to hear this week? What does someone need? What's going to help heal somebody? And we're open and allow to receive whatever that is. It usually comes in the form of a word, compassion, forgiveness, gratitude, joy. And it comes, and then the week is really a combination of, and this is the collaboration is interesting. I'm probably more the sort of the scientist intellectual, and then I go look at my wife, and she does all the research. She goes online, and she finds the right scripture. It may be Buddhist, it may be very often, you know, it's directly out of the New Testament or the Old Testament for that matter. She'll find the perfect scriptures, and we'll work through things that would help us. And she very often will write pieces of the talk during the week because she has more of a flexible schedule than I have had in the past. And then Saturday morning, I take all her research and the scriptures and some of the things that I've pulled together, including the music that I've picked out with our wonderful music director, Barbara Whitney. This is a shout out to Barb. I hope she's listening at some point. Fantastic music director. We put all that stuff together, and then usually Saturday morning, I will then sit in the church offices early in the morning and just pull the whole thing together. And Marianne is usually in her office next to mine, and I might yell over the cubicle wall a question or an idea or how does this sound. So we kind of, as I said before, she very much is in the lead, if you will, feeding me, and then I sort of get it over the finish line. But there would be no start without the work and the inspiration that she gives me. So that's kind of how it works for us right now, and it's a lot of fun. I know you've been to a few services and seen the look on your face, and it's a lot of fun. And it is, I think you're asking about sort of what inspires us. What inspires us, and I think Marianne sort of touched upon it, is we go through this process, the music, and, you know, there's a meditation after the talk that Marianne usually does. I happened to do it last week. She was away. That was a lot of fun. And then I do a lot of the channeled prayers during the service. And then invariably, one person or 12 people might come up to us during fellowship or right after service and say, hey, Rev, you said such and such. And there'll be one line or a line from a song or a line from the meditation. And that's exactly what I needed to hear this week because such and such happened to me during the week. And it's, just, you know, they had a falling out with a loved one, they were sick, or their kids were driving them, you know, crazy or something like that, or they're just having challenges with the little blessed ones. And but there was one thing in that whole stew that just helped them, and we look at each other in the car on the way home and say, just keep going, all in divine right order, we're supposed to be doing this right now because somebody was helped.
Absolutely, and that's absolutely how I feel about this radio show, too. And it's funny, the shows were lined up until this week. This week was the last week of schedules. And the last couple of shows actually mimicked, you two and I were on the same page about compassion and about, you know, and I'm like, sweet, this is great. And then when today opened up, It was perfect synchronicity, that whole cosmic webbing that we do together. And so it's been great, definitely, for sure.
So inspiring, yeah.
It is. It's a beautiful life. It's just there's no other way to be other than in love with it.
You got it, Rusty.
All right. So what I'd like to do is go to your next song and kind of talk about that a little bit, because I know I ended up missing the flutes. I don't know where in the world I was. I feel like Carmen San Diego sometimes. or Where's Waldo? But you recently held a class or a workshop in regards to the flutes.
A Wednesday night service, yes.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that, and then I'll turn on Raven.
Sure, I can back into that a little bit. Actually, that's really how we got our start at Unity of the Seacoast, more than probably, a couple years ago, two, three years ago. I had been ordained, and there was a minister at that time, and she asked us, she said, hey, would you guys like to do something, maybe some meditation, the oneness blessing, maybe some music on some night? And I said, well, what would that be? She said, well, call it an interfaith healing service. I said, what is that? And she said, I have no idea, but I'm sure you guys will figure it out. And what we did with that is we have a Wednesday evening service, and we're not hosting them on a regular basis right now, maybe once or twice a month, but we've had people like Amy come on and do a Wednesday service. I don't know if she's talked about that yet, but she's come on and done a couple of it. Just people just love with the vibrational, the forks and the oils and the history of everything has been fabulous. But that all started off with us doing Wednesday evening services, which are essentially a little bit of my music or borrowed music, visual meditation. We then have people share. They bring in scripture, they bring in poetry, they bring in stuff from, again, Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson, different teachers and stuff. And then we typically have about a 20-minute sound healing, and that's where the flutes sit in. I was very inspired a few years ago going to a Unity service in Amesbury, seeing a shaman who was playing the Native American flutes, and I walked in the bookstore, and he was playing, it was Michael Retzky. Michael was playing, I know a lot of your listeners have probably heard of Michael, Native American shaman, fabulous musician. He was playing, and I looked over and said, I got to do that. And I've been collecting flutes ever since. And when we started to do this stuff, I realized from having gone to didgeridoo, sound healing, and crystal bowls, which we also have added to our repertoire of sound healing, that music, sound healing is just a very, very powerful complement to having your mind in the right place, and then your aura, your meridians, whatever you want to call it, can be balanced by these beautiful vibrations. So getting to answer your question finally in more detail is the flutes have been there with me for a while. I have a collection of flutes, and people will come up. Marianne holds sacred space, sort of doing Reiki, if you will, and we'll sit, and the flute picks itself out. Someone holds an intention in their heart, essentially to release something that's holding them back from their divinity, from awakening, and these songs come through. What you're going to hear now is an example from one of my favorite flutes that I have. It was a handmade flute from a friend a few years ago. Just the flute itself, see how people react to it. We find it very healing, and people generally are able to, release at least a little bit of the burdens that they come with through this particular modality.
All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you.
to us a little bit about, was that something that you wrote yourself, or is that...
Oh, yeah, everything on the album is all my own compositions and continuing to write, you know, write new stuff today. And I play all the... I'm also a multi-instrumentalist, too, so I play all the instruments on the album. I play... Well, I have my flutes, and, you know, from Rusty, from having been in some services, you've probably seen me play the guitar and the bass guitar. I don't know if you've seen the harp yet. Yeah. So I we have a lot of fun. We also do curtain. Every couple of months we'll do curtain, and I'll play the harmonium.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne plays the tapura, and we have an electric tabla, and we get everybody going, doing the different basic curtains and things like that. So that's where we kind of get to go off and do some little bit of Hinduism and have a lot of fun with that too.
Very cool. So what was your inspiration behind this particular song?
That particular song?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember having any particular inspiration other than I had a flute that one of my member of a band I was in at the time had handmade specially as a wedding gift. And he said, "Here's this flute." And he knew I was starting to play the flute more and more. And he said he had a little card, and it said, "This is Raven's Song." And I said, "Oh, Raven's Song. I've got to go do something with this." Mm-hmm. So I sat down at the piano, one afternoon, and it came to me, the piano, and I had one of my Native American drums out, and I picked up the flute and just did the tracks, and it was just in honor of that particular culture and that faith tradition, the Native American culture. I won't call it a religion because it's not a religion to me. It's a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
That everything is love. Everything is, is the divine. And everything is sacred. The birds, the animals, even if it's an old raven, it's got a beautiful song and something to bring to the earth. You know.
Very cool. So, here's another stumper question. I'm going to start with you, Reverend Marianne.
Oh,
what did you want to be when you grew up? What did you want to be when you grew up? Was it a reverend, or what do you think?
Tell the truth. I've never asked you this myself.
I know.
Oh, so see, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
When I was very young, I wanted to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I wanted to help. I know. And my father said, "No, you will become a teacher." So I became an English teacher. But that's what I wanted to do, and I wasn't allowed to. I've always been very interested in people. And I have this, I've always said, I can't read minds. I can't feel certain things, but I have a knowing. So I have a knowing about how other people are thinking and feeling, and I know when someone's upset. And I thought everybody did that, but it was cool, and everybody doesn't do that. So that's how I perceive the world, through this knowing. And that's probably why I wanted to help others, because I could see. I mean, I had somewhat of a dysfunctional family life, like most of us, growing up. But I was also always able to say, well, he or she did this because. And I always knew that the person was innately good, was innately loving, and you know, I could always feel that, which was amazing for a small child. But so I've always been like that. No, I didn't think of ministry until I had to go through sickness. And being healing and how I was being healed. I had no religious background. My mom died when I was very young. So it was just my dad, no brothers or sisters, and it was hard enough just, you know, working and taking care of a child that I had no religious background. But I did have an interest in religion. I'm just thinking about this now. Because I didn't have a religious background and my neighbors did, you know, I didn't go to church. I was like, ugh. You know, I wonder what it's about. I did go to a Jesuit college to be an English teacher. And the first thing we had to take was Old Testament, New Testament. I was very interested in it because I wanted to know what these children were learning in church. So I was very, very interested. And, so I could see the interest here and there. And I remember my father, I was very nice, I guess. My father said, you should be a nun. You're like a nun. So I had this, you know.
No, she's not.
I'm not.
No offense to nun.
Yeah, so I had, I had this in my head that people thought of me like that. It was I went to a Jesuit college, but when my children were born, we christened them Catholic, and then from Catholic we went to Protestant, to a Protestant church instead, so we switched, bringing the children up congregational. But at the same time, when my children were really young, I put my son, there was no children to play with, there was a play group, and it was at a temple. And I was like, oh, just a couple of mornings. You know, it was, everyone else was Jewish but me. But I was immediately put in to be the teacher. So, again, I was teaching. So when I look back at it, you know, that's how you do it. You look back and go, how did I end up here? Well, I was always involved with all different religions when you think about it. And you don't think about it until it all happens. And you go, that's why I'm here.
Each of those little paver paths. The stones that are put in front of you, and you don't realize it because we just automatically do, and we go from our heart and we move forward, and then you look back down your path and you're like, oh my God, all of the signs, like big neon signs, were there the whole time, but I was just so busy doing that
living,
I didn't even acknowledge.
Well,
yeah,
sitting there, I know. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Exactly. Very cool. So, Reverend Phil, what did you want to be when you grew up? And we don't have to get into the Superman story.
Oh, you were there for that. That's a story for another day, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very seriously now, since as long as I can remember, all the way to a very early age, I wanted to be a beetle.
The insect or the
no.
I have to clarify because I get emails and dex mails and you know people laugh.
It isn't no the. Beat the Beatles. I wanted to be the fifth Beatle. I was really hoping that Paul would eventually quit the bass and I could be the tall red haired bass player in the beat. No, I as long as I can remember, it's always been music and being a musician, and I've been able to do that off and on in my life and never getting tons of encouragement from that. And it's unfortunately never been a top career field in the United States, like it actually can be in Europe and some other places as well. So I've done some other things in my life, but as long as I can remember, I had older sisters. I remember, in fact, the same sister that was not encouraging me to be the red-haired Superman story that you know about. She had a wonderful collection of early Beatles albums and Beach Boys and The Who and The Kinks. And so back in the '60s, I'd be playing with my Lincoln Logs and my Legos in my room when I was, 4 or 5 years old. And I have rock and roll on Saturday afternoon, blasting from the bedroom across the hall. And I was, I loved it too, because they were the one thing about it I think was inspirational to me, early, that 60s rock and roll, whatever you want to call it. There were so many great songs, especially the early Beatles, about, Love Me Do and All You Need Is Love. And I love John Lennon. I miss him, still miss him terribly, and feel sadness when I think of his death. And I just loved him so much, because he and Yoko, that's all they talked about is, hey, man, all you need is love, love and peace. And he's right. He was right. And he's still right to this day. So to me, it's always been, music and the message that can be conveyed through music. And I think I definitely took some detours in the 70s, because I was in a, I wouldn't say it was a punk band, but I was in an
Get
original
out,
band.
Really?
I was in a, kind of a punk band, and we played at some interesting clubs in Boston, like The Rat and The Underground, and some pretty famous clubs, but we're from New Hampshire, so we would play on Wednesday nights and things like that. And we have a ball, but the thing about that particular movement that I got sort of immersed in was there was definitely, I don't want to pick on people because some of these people are my friends still, but there was, and they would probably agree with me, there was just an overt amount of negativity in the lyrics. And self-destruction and all that rock and roll, sex and drugs and rock and roll, and so, you know, that's something I think that luckily God sort of pulled me out of that, and I went off and had sort of an Ozzie and Harriet life for a little while. But I came back in my 40s, as I mentioned, when the mother of my children and I split up. I found myself coming right back into being in a rock band. I was in a jazz band, and then I met Mary Ann, and she brought me to Unity, and I thought, wow, I can put it all together with spiritual music, and I can take my lyric writing ability and my compositional skills that I learned as a kid, pull that all together, and learn different instruments and be able to do it on Sunday morning when everyone's sober and, you know, relatively awake and feeling positive. And they're not there to get negative, you know, in a negative charge with the alcohol and the cigarettes way down. They're there to be lifted out of the mire of their week, whatever that may have been. So it was a complete turnaround. So for me, it was music and a music ministry, and then that just blossomed into what, you know, you have seen and hopefully other people will want to see at Unity of the Seacoast in Rawlinsford.
Very cool. Now, why don't you give out your website?
The website is, what is it, unityoftheseacoast.org.
Or .com, yeah.
Not .com yet. Our communications manager will
will
correct you on that.
Org.
She's probably listening going, no, it's org, not yet. unityoftheseacoast.org. And it's a really, really nice, simple page. It'll give you all kinds of information about the mission, which, by the way, we didn't say the mission. The mission of Unity of the Seacoast is to be a loving presence in the community, getting people to help embrace their own divinity. And there's some bio stuff on us. There's lots of links, and one of the links you can we have a YouTube site. Folks can take a look at recent events. There's a few of our talks on there. There's a Christmas concert from last year with different people. There was a concert that Barbara and I gave about a year ago, so you can hear our music. And we're also on Facebook as well, and you can just pop Unity of the Seacoast into Facebook and get to our page. And that tells, you know, either you're going to get calendar information either off the website or off of Facebook. So thanks for asking that question, Rusty.
Absolutely. All right. So if you have any questions, we're wrapping up the show. We got about 20 minutes left, give or take. The number here is 347-205-9443. Definitely feel free to Facebook Unity of the Seacoast. I was corrected the other day because I was saying Seacoast Unity, just to confuse people. Connect with me on Facebook. Most of you are already on there, but if you're not, it's facebook.com/celiacroads. So talk to me about inspiration. What is motivating, re-motivating, re-inspiring? What is the message out of anything that people have heard? We've heard talent, we've heard grace, we've heard love, compassion. What is that one message that you want our listeners, my listeners, to hear and really resonate?
One thing would be to love yourself. We do spiritual counseling on Saturdays, and many of the stories, people are trying to help other people. They're worrying, a lot of women, especially worrying about things that are happening and what other people are thinking or feeling about them. And we always stress, take care of yourself first.
Yes,
if you don't take care of yourself, you won't be good for anyone.
Yeah, we call it caregiver syndrome. You've probably heard of that before. People that are just love their family and their friends so much, and they're giving so much, and they're empty. And we've just found that it seems to be what I think. We always look at each other and go, "Yep, here we are again, saying the same darn easy thing over again." What matter? You know, what's, you know, love yourself. What's your passion? You've got to take care of yourself first, or you're useless. You can't serve other people unless you serve yourself. And they go, really? And the answer is always yes. But we're not taught this.
And then when there's they don't have an answer for the problems, I always tell them to just go within, to release it. And it's all in Divine Right Order anyways. While we're trying to work very hard, trying to take care of everything, it's already answered. And so that's one of the main things, I think.
All right. Reverend Phil, did you have anything that you wanted to add to that?
No, I think that pretty much says it all. I mean, it's as simplistic as that may be. We say it almost every week. We are temporary physical manifestations of the divine, of God. So we're from the Creator, of the Creator. And what does that all mean? We were talking about it last Sunday. We're teaching, working with Anita Mirjani's book, Dying to Be Me. And one of the
great
things
book.
That I taught, I basically based a good chunk of the service around was something I quoted over and over again. When she went through that near-death experience, one of the main things she learned was that God is not a being. God is a state of being. Mm-hmm. And what is that state of being? I say it's love. So we keep coming back to the same thing. Sorry it's a broken record, but John Lennon was right. It's all about love, man.
Very, very cool. Reverend Marianne, do you have anything that you would like to add?
Let's see.
Do you want to spend like 5 minutes or so talking about sacred love, unconditional love, from just what we're doing this Sunday, maybe? Totally up to you.
This Sunday we're actually going away.
Sweet vacation, I hope.
Yes, we have a special guest this Sunday that's going to be taking our place. But, yes.
No, I'm saying her name is Reverend Amy Cousins.
She's
an end-of-life grief counselor, also an ordained interfaith minister. And she's kind of fitting in the middle of our Adventures in Faith series, looking at Anita Mirjani's book, really from the standpoint of somebody who has been with people who are making the transition or about to make the transition and what their reflections are. And Amy's message is that you don't have to have an NDE, a near-death experience, to awaken to your own divinity and to figure out who and what you are. And it comes back to, you know, a lot of what we've been talking about today, you know, how you are loved,
mm-hmm.
and just how precious. And Mirjani, the only word she could come up with was magnificence, the magnificence of being a spiritual being in a human's body. But she said it just goes way beyond that, but still a wonderful message. So, yeah, Amy Cousins will be there, and we'll have good music there, and then we'll be back the following Sunday, Halloween, and we're encouraging people to, this doesn't happen in church very often, at least the ones I've been to, but it seems to be a unity tradition at some of the churches. We're encouraging people to dress up and express their inner self, their inner being. So it's going to be a really interesting service. If you're around, Rusty, please drop by. It'll be fun. If you're not in costume. So, yeah.
Take pictures if I'm not there. I'm dying to see.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, do you want to give out your website as we wrap up your portion of the show?
Yeah, website is unityoftheseacoast.org, O-R-G, and love to have folks come visit that. Love to have folks come visit us on Sundays at 10 is our regular service. We do have child care, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday evenings, we have our Interfaith Community Healing Service. That's all on the website. We have a Course in Miracles group that meets on Monday evening, and a lot of other great things happening throughout the week, and all of it happening in Rollinsford, New Hampshire, which you're going to need directions, but it's a beautiful site and located on the Salmon Falls village and on the falls. It's absolutely a beautiful spot.
And we're a very loving family, very close to each other, the congregants, and very welcoming.
Absolutely. I can testify firsthand on that one. So very, very grateful to have had you both on today and to give us a little bit of what it's like to understand faith versus spirituality and what it means to be interfaith, which I'm so thrilled to have just had that discussion live, finally. And talk about unity and some of your music and some of your creative moments and inspiration. And so I'm very grateful. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you, Rusty. It was wonderful.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it very much. And
yes.
So does, and everyone in Unity thanks you very much for getting the word out there, especially where we're the only Unity church in New Hampshire. We just know it's going to get better and better. Great movement, great people, positive, progressive, practical Christianity, and more.
Absolutely, that's very, very cool. So namaste, and thank you so
namaste.
Much. Big hugs,
namaste.
And have a great vacation, and hopefully I'll see you the following Sunday.
Thank you, Rusty. God bless you.
Bless you.
Bless you. What an incredible life I live. It's amazing. I have Jewish friends, Muslim friends, Hindu friends, Christian friends of all different variations, from Mennonite to Catholic to Baptist, and discovered this little tiny sweet church, Unity. And there's just such a variety, and I just feel so enriched, so blessed, and so grateful for all that I am and all that I do. And so next week I'm feeling like we should have a discussion on happiness, what that means, how to inspire happiness, and where to go from when you're not feeling so happy. And I know environmentally we have some challenges. Here in the U.S., we have the upcoming political race, and there seems to be quite a bit of action and motion in regards to politics right now. And I just see a lot of people not as happy as they should be. And we're headed into fall. We're getting ready for Thanksgiving and Christmas and all of these fun family festivities, but everybody kind of looks a little down. So I think next week's going to be about happiness. If you have any questions, definitely send me an email at Rusty, R-U-S-T-I-E, at RustyMacDonald.com. And if you want, you know, have any input about happiness and how to motivate happy in you, in your body, in your soul, and how to motivate other people, send it to me or call in. I'm always here. And as always, wrapping up the humpity hump, today is Wednesday. I love you. You are beautiful. I am grateful for you. Have a great week. Until next week.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.